My name is Lowell Berlanti, and I created the podcast Prodigy to study intelligence and expert performance by interviewing psychologists, scientists, and the prodigies themselves. Listen to Prodigy every Thursday on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Beta Sports, Martin Anos on this Thursday. Coming up on Tuesday, we'll be down in Boca. UCF will take on BYU. The Boca Bowl's one of the better matchups. Of course, a lot of bowls haven't had their matchups set, but certainly appealing because the two offenses. We look forward to that football game coming up on Tuesday. Our next guest has the job of promoting the bowls, helping bowls get off the ground, convincing people that bowls are still valuable. I'm in that group. I'm not bothered by the number of bowls we have. If you don't like a bowl game, don't watch it. But I like bowl games. We know this year is unique in many ways, and we may not get as many bowls. But our next guest certainly knows about that. Nick Carparelli has been in college athletics for many years, and these days, as I said, oversees our bowl world, known as the bowl season, and he's the executive director. Nick, good morning. How are you?
I'm great, Mark. How are you today?
I'm doing fine. First, explain a little bit about, you know, your day-to-day operation, like I said, is to make sure that the bowls get the attention and the coverage and the system and all sorts of stuff. So explain the name now to go to bowl season and the campaign this year.
Yeah, so we've been the Football Bowl Association for over 30 years, and for all that time it's been, you know, almost exclusively an internal facing organization, basically like any other trade association. We're a bunch of like businesses come together, and we have an annual meeting and all of that stuff. And we rebranded this year, and we're just trying to change who we are a little bit. We're now the bowl season, just like March Madness dominates the college basketball world in March. Bowl season is what we look forward to in December and early January every year. So we have this new name that's really not so new, but it has great brand recognition right off the bat. We have a great logo. You're going to see it on the fields of these bowl games. You're going to see it, you know, really next year when we get back to normal, really wrapped up even more. And it's just going to give us an opportunity to promote all the great things that bowl games do for the student athletes and the communities that host them.
Nick, what's the challenge? Obviously, in 2020, we all know what's been challenging in college football, but obviously a number of bowls chose for a number of reasons to not play this year. What has it been like as you work with these people across the country?
Well, you know, it's been challenging, but I don't know if it's been any more challenging than what anybody else in the world's been dealing with, you know, the last, you know, eight, 9 months. But we got through it. You know, I think we'd have been naive to think that there wouldn't be a handful of games that have had to take the year off. I mean, we're seeing cancellations in college football and the NFL on a week-to-week basis. You know, and the games that had to put their games off this year and resume next year were, you know, probably a little bit predictable based on where they're located. You know, we have, you know, three games in California. We have, you know, El Paso is having a big spike. You know, a couple bowls off the mainland in Hawaii and the Bahamas, New York City, you know, so we probably shouldn't be shocked by those locations. You know, we have a lot of bowl games in Texas, a lot of bowl games in Florida, and they're going to be played, and they'll even have a few fans. So, you know, it's a difficult year, but we're thankful that there's going to be a bowl season. There's going to be 30 some odd games played, and I know people are going to enjoy watching them.
By the way, before I expand more, I think I had this correct. You had the idea for the bowl game at Yankee Stadium, right?
I did, yeah. That's one of my one of my professional accomplishments.
Okay.
I'm more proud of. I grew up a Yankee fan and worked with the Yankees to start that, so that's pretty cool for me.
Okay, take me through that story, because I think I read about this, but share it. So you have an idea to play a football game at Yankee Stadium, and the hallowed grounds are different in the new Yankee Stadium versus the old one, but what was the pushback or feedback when you go, I have this idea?
Yeah, so it actually, you know, the story starts, you know, when I was the deputy commissioner at the Big East, you know, Big East teams were, you know, back then we were always the visitors to bowl games, right? Where our fan bases were traveling the furthest. We were all going down south, which was a great thing because of the weather, but we were a little bit at a disadvantage. So it actually, you know, predates the building of the new Yankee Stadium is when the Giants and the Jets were seriously contemplating building a domed stadium on the west side of Manhattan. So we partnered with them and we announced the Big Apple Bowl and it was going to be in this domed stadium and people were excited. But when that didn't happen, when that stadium was not built, the Yankees had just opened the new stadium. And I didn't quite want to give up on the idea. You know, being a big Yankee fan, as you said, the hallowed grounds of Yankee Stadium. I said, you know what? It's outdoors, but it's a, you know, a $1.2 billion stadium. And, you know, all the suites are winterized and The concessions and the concourses are winterized, and you know, there's enough appeal to that that even though it's cold weather, that I think people might like it. And you know, we had to sell it to the Yankees a little bit; they weren't sure, but I know they're very proud of it now. Last year was their 10th anniversary, and it's one of those mid-level games that if a team's kind of in that range, they lobby to be in that game. So I'm really proud of it.
Now we got a bowl game at Fenway. It was supposed to be this year, but now next year. Look where you started, Nick.
Yeah, well, I don't know if I started anything, but you know, as you said, the more bowls, the merrier for me. You know, some people like to say there's too many. I think one of my jobs with this new bowl season brand is to really bring to light all the great things about every bowl game. You know, how they're unique to the community and what a great experience they are for the student athlete. I mean, you mentioned the Pinstripe Bowl. You know, 95% of the kids on the teams who go to the Pinstripe Bowl have never been to New York in their life. And, you know, unfortunately, there's probably a lot of them that may never have the opportunity to, but they do then. You know, the same will be the case for Boston and Fenway Park. So I think that's one of the great things about bowl games that people don't focus on enough.
Nick Caporelli's with us, executive director for the bowl season, overseeing the bowls in college football. Quickly, 10 o'clock hour, WYGM Orlando, WJRR HD2 Cocoa Beach, Orlando sports leader, Mark Daniels, Sabita Sports. Touch on, because you just mentioned this before, the importance for some of these towns that host a bowl game. And I think sometimes people get caught up, and I get it, in the major bowls of New Year's Six, but there are some proud towns in this country that host those bowl games. It benefits local charities. Why does that matter? What's the importance of those bowls?
Well, you know, I think one of the things we learned during the pandemic is Americans love sports, and they love college football. You know, and there are some parts of the country that made, you know, that Division I college football doesn't come to very often, right? Or there's certain teams because of the league that their local team is in, they don't get to experience live, you know, these teams. So the simple game itself is exciting to these communities. But, you know, the revenue that it generates and the economic impact due to the fans coming to town at a time of year that people typically are not traveling, is really important to these communities. And a lot of the bowls, some of the more established bowls, have a big charitable component. You know, they're giving back to their community. They're refurbishing, you know, fields and courts for the youth of that community, and they really do such good work. You know, unfortunately, the Sun Bowl is not going to be played this year. You know, that's the second oldest bowl game out there, and it's the biggest sporting event in El Paso every year. 80% of they sell out every game. 80% of their fans are local, and they look forward to it. You know, you have some younger bowl games. You know, the Boca Raton Bowl is become a destination for teams to want to go. I mean, it's a cool location. The stadium's the right size. You don't have to fill it, you know, for it to be a great atmosphere. And this year, yeah, I mean, it's one of the more compelling matchups. You have the UCF team that, you know, has built a program to the point where they're disappointed with three losses but still have something to prove. And they're going to have the opportunity to do it against a really, really good BYU team. So I'm excited to watch it. I'm going to be there in person. So I can't wait.
You know, the give back part, and once you get past people that go, oh, you know, the number of bowls or the media plays their punchline about who the sponsors are. And I say this in our town. I'm proud they're a partner of ours. You know, good folks at Florida Citrus Sports, the Cheez-It Bowl, the VRBO Citrus
yes.
Bowl. The Cure Bowl has given millions of dollars for research in breast cancer. It's like there's really good stuff being done, and the community work that Florida Citrus Sports has done, I mean, that's stuff that helps your community. I mean, once you get past, you know, just a football game, there's stuff that stays behind that helps your community.
Absolutely. I mean, Florida Citrus Sports and the two bowl games they run, I mean, they're near the top, you know, in terms of bowl organization. Steve Hogan and his team do it. Just an unbelievable job. And yeah, if you're in that community, you know the Citrus Bowl, Florida Citrus Sports, and what they do beyond just game day, you know, and maybe not on a national level, that story isn't told as much. So people don't have an appreciation for the game and everything that goes on beyond the game. But bowl games are just so meaningful to their communities and to the student athletes who play in them. It's college football's postseason. It's unique, and it's not going to change. It's not a seeded, bracketed, survive and advance type tournament, but Division I college football does not lend itself to that, you know. And the majority of college football needs something to strive for, something to play for, and most of them can't dream of sniffing the playoffs. So they have different goals, and you know, they're rewarded at the end of a season with a great bowl trip.
Nick, you've done this many years to the Big East, and even your years working under Armour now, and the role that you're in now. Has the playoff helped hurt in some way, Bowles? I mean, I think we media and fans sometimes build this up that if you don't make the playoff, you've had a bad season. And I get frustrated sometimes when people go, well, yeah, we were 9-3, but it wasn't a good year. And it's like, wait a minute, hold on a second. That's still a pretty good run for a year. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. I think people thought the expansion of the playoff to four teams was going to hurt the bowl system. I think it's done anything but that. You know, we've seen the number of bowl games increase since then. And as I mentioned earlier, for a very small portion of college football, the playoff is a realistic goal. For the rest, they have to have something to play for, whether they're a mid-major type program that's just trying to overachieve and compare themselves to their previous years, or whether they're a program in a bigger conference who feels they can be a playoff contender someday, but that doesn't happen overnight. So you need steps along the way. You need building blocks, and there's different types of bowl games that you can go to based on the season you had and what type of team you are in that given year. And I've yet to see a team participate in a bowl game and win their game and be unhappy about it. You've seen it. It's a celebration. You think they've won the national championship, and a lot of times it's a launching point for the following season. You see a lot of teams who win bowl games have better years the following year than they did the year before. So they're exciting. They're all meaningful, and I love them all.
I got two final questions. The role of television in bowl matchups, we go back years. As you remember, they were handing out bowl bids in October sometimes. I mean, to get Notre Dame, they get the invite in October. But today, the role of television, and look, ESPN owns most of these bowls, so obviously they're going to have a say in that, but what is the role of TV in these matchups these days?
Yeah, I think in some ways people miss that old system because there was a little more intrigue and bowls had more control over their matchups. You know, now there's contracts in place with conferences in advance, but the teams aren't slotted till the end. So I think in that way, that's a positive, right? You're not seeing that matchup put in place in October and then one team falters and by bowl season, it's not a good matchup anymore. You're seeing a lot of really good matchups in bowl games in recent years. And TV probably plays a role a little bit more up front. You know, these conferences negotiate contracts and agreements with bowl games to slot their teams based on the standings at the end of the season. And then the bowl games negotiate, TV contracts with networks based on the selection number that they get, So TV plays a role, but probably not as much as you would think in the end.
Let me end with this. What was tougher, being the football schedule maker and satisfying all members of the Big East when the schedule went out, or being the director of operations for Bill Belichick and the Patriots? Which was tougher?
By far, making the schedule for the Big East coaches, because somehow I found a way. We had 8 teams in the Big East, and somehow I found a way, in their eyes, every year, to create the 8 worst schedules possible for any individual coach. But with Coach Belichick, at least, it was pretty clear what he wanted. I had to please one person, and I'd like to think I did that pretty well.
Was there any one thing that Belichick was like, it had to be this, whether it was coffee or on a road trip, this? Was there any one thing that Belichick absolutely had to have that he still needs today?
In terms of little, idiosyncratic things like, coffee prepared a certain way or, whatever else you want to think of. He wasn't, there weren't too many things like that, but he had his preferences, we traveled pretty lean, not a lot of frills, as you would imagine. A lot of coaches like to have their, hotel on the road near a lot of activity so that so the players can be occupied in their downtime, maybe in a downtown area or by a mall or whatever. Coach kind of liked it more isolated, so there was nothing for them to do. So they didn't have too many options. So not too much. He wasn't really a superstitious guy, but just very detail-oriented and no frills, which, as I said, that's probably not a surprise to anybody.
Nick Carparoli, the executive director for the bowl season, overseeing the bowls all across the country. Nick, thank you. Have a happy holiday. Appreciate it.
Thank you. You as well.